Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
The biggest pro football overlays in Vegas are back with $12 million in guaranteed prizes only at Circa Sports. With two ways to win and no rake. Circa Million with quarterly payouts and 100% payback. And Circa Survivor. Select one team each week with no point spread. Take in the big money with $12 million in guaranteed prizes. Enter in Vegas, play from anywhere. Visit CircaSports.com for details.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Fan in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network. I'm joined, as always, by myself, Armani Buckets, Mr. Brandon Deutsch. We are sans Arash because he's living the life in Vegas, my second home away from home. But how are you guys doing?
Well, I'm doing great because this is the Vegas crew that we... that was the highlight, personally, of my summer, just hanging out with this trio. Arash was obviously well. For summer league, but this was like we were close, us three for 48 hours, right?
Yeah, we definitely bonded that trip. Yeah, we definitely bonded that trip.
It was a fun time. Yeah.
Yeah. No, definitely.
Wish we saw Rob Pelinka though to convince him to train for Kyrie.
But that, well, we got to give the people a backstory because the whole time in Vegas, you were adamant about running into Rob
and Sean Marks
and convincing them to get that deal done, and unfortunately
didn't happen.
Did not happen. We didn't see them.
We didn't even see Rob Pelinka, so yeah. I guess it's kind of null and void right there, right? Yeah. Well, okay, guys, let's head to the headlines brought to you by Circa Sports. Circa Millions and Circa Survivor Pro football contests are back with $12 million in guaranteed prizes. Visit CircaSports.com for details. Let's do this. Well, the NFL had a preseason game last night. Did anybody watch it? And was it great to have at least some NFL back, even though it's a pregame season?
You know, I watched part of it, but I love the Derek Carr, Devontae Adams interview more than the game itself. I want to hear the guy, you know, and it's sad because you want to support the guys that are having an opportunity there that would not normally have an opportunity. But I wanted to see the stars. I wanted to see him talk about the team, you know, their connection. And it was fun to see the interviews more so than the game. But just being around football, having a type of football game regardless, it was fun. It was definitely something that was great.
Jihei, you said this on our car ride over to the studio. You said that, you know, it's good to have it on in the background, the Hall of Fame game, because I was actually surprised that Josh Jacobs was playing as a starter, because typically you don't see any starters in the Hall of Fame game. But it's like a good background music, you know? You don't digest yourself into the Hall of Fame game typically unless, I don't know, you might have a gambling problem. No judgment here, but, you know, it's great to have football back. It just is such a tease to the real thing. And honestly, the whole preseason is, but, you know, it was great to see football back. I actually didn't see the interview that you're referring to, Brandon, but I'm assuming that it had something to do with the optimism surrounding Carr and Devontae heading into this season. But yeah, it's football season is finally here. That day is like, it's a turning point for us as sports fans, because we've been talking about for the past few months, not past few months, I guess a month, month and a half, 2 months, that, you know, sports is is slowing down, and then you have the Hall of Fame game is like the moment where it all starts to get better.
So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you did have a gambling problem and you did bet on this game, at least you covered.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the Raiders were, Raiders favored it too.
Can we talk about something for a second, real quick? Speaking of gambling, tell me if this is free money, Armon. I mean, Vegas usually knows what's going on, but Pistons over under 27.5 wins with Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey, Sadiq Bey, Isaiah Stewart, Jalen Duren, all the guys, you know, they have. I mean, they're going to get at least 35 wins, in my opinion.
I mean, I would definitely hit that over, right? 30. I think they'll hit the 30 mark for sure with that roster.
Right. I was just thinking about that. Speaking of gambling, I was going to just bet that right. I'm trying to link up with a new bookie. My old bookie went to prison. So. Yeah, I need a new, you know, he was gambling. No, I'm kidding. I'm joking on that. But
yeah, no, I'm the exact same way. I 27 and a half. Like, yeah.
I'll just go to Vegas and place a bet because having a bookie is illegal and I do not have a bookie. Yeah. Well, used to. It was a mistake.
It seems like a ridiculously low number. Maybe not ridiculously low, but I agree with you, Jihei and Brandon. 30 is like the bare minimum for that team. And I was shocked to see that number because everybody's been hyping up the offseason. They brought back the horse jerseys.
Dude, Cade's going to take that huge leap. Yeah. I only think there's only one guy I think that could take a bigger leap than Cade next season, and that's Anthony Edwards. But other than that, it's like, I think Cade's 24-8-8 next year, dude.
Speaking of Anthony Edwards, did you guys see the quote that he
said? Yeah, he's going to be the best player in the NBA next year. I don't deny it. That man has confidence, and that's something like, confidence you can't get. I mean, it's like
you need that in order to
in his ceiling. Just that. People talk about LaMelo. All 32 GMs would have taken Anthony Edwards and would still do it because LaMelo cannot play defense the way Anthony Edwards can play defense.
Do we think his ceiling is the best player in the NBA? Because I think
his ceiling's like a top five NBA player. I would say that, you know, he's never going to be a LeBron, although it's hard to put limits on people. You just don't know. Like, there's guys that made a TikTok about Jason Preston. He was a journalist in high school. He didn't even play high school. And then he went to Ohio, balled out, and is now in the NBA for the Clippers. So you just don't know. I hate to do that because people have done that in my career. And it's like, what do you mean? I could become the best pitcher in the world. You know, it's like, why would, even though I'm not even close, you know what I'm saying? Like, why would you ever, like, you can do it. Yeah. Everybody can do something. So I think he could become the best player in the NBA, but I'd say realistically, you know, I don't want to put limits, but I could see him becoming a top five player as a ceiling.
But also you're not in his head. You're not there at the workouts with him every single day. You're not in the gym with him every day. So it's really hard. You're right. It's hard to put that finality and be like, no, bro, like you're a top five, but you're not going to be the best, you know? So it's just really,
why can't he be the best? I mean, Giannis, absolutely. No one thought Giannis would be good. Jokic. I mean, those are two of the top three players in the NBA right now.
Absolutely. Right? So. Absolutely. Well, transitioning over to the Angels, you know, the worst owner of baseball, they hit 7 solo home runs and lost. Only the second team to do so in the history of the game. Shohei Ohtani hit 2 home runs, but the Angels lost 8-7. Can this team, guys, get to even 10 games under 500 by the end of the season?
It's really sad. I think most people in baseball, including Angel fans like myself, want them to succeed so badly. But, you know, Artie Moreno, he has the money. He's provided a lot of financial, a financial cushion for this team. But if he's not already, he really needs to let Perry Minashian just take over the reins. And he has no say in this because, you know, it's unfortunate. I don't want to say he has an ego or he has pride because I'm sure he's a great guy. But at the end of the day, you have to let your the most successful organizations let their general managers put in work. You know what I'm saying? He needs to let him have full reins. If he wants to trade Ohtani, he trains Ohtani for a rebuild. You know, I know Ohtani makes Artie and the Angels a ton of money, but he definitely needs to stop being, you know, so in on everything. Like even Steve Cohen, not as much in on everything. He just provides the money, right? Steve Ballmer for the Clippers, right? Oh, he just provides the money. You know, just Lawrence Frank and the others do the work, and Jerry West, right? That's what Artie Moreno needs to do with the Angels, and it might not happen next year, but long term, it will benefit the Angels for sure.
Let's say that he does pull the reins and says like, okay, you guys do your thing, like what you got hired to do.
Yeah.
What do you think will happen in the following season,
then? I think they'll have a winning record next year if he lets Perry do what he needs to do. I really do. Yeah. I mean, but I don't think they're going to finish 10 games under. I think this is a 90 loss team. It could be even be a 100 loss team, depending on the trajectory they're going.
How many tweaks are needed, or what kind of tweaks are needed to the roster to get to that?
They're not that far away. A lot of times the Angels go after stars, but I would say with the money they have allocated, they don't have to extend Ohtani yet. He's going to go to arbitration. They're going to have to pay him like $25 million next year because, or more. He probably has the highest arbitration case of all time. They need to go out and get Carlos Rodon, who's an unrestricted free agent. He's going to opt out of his deal. He's not like the star that, Artie Moreno and the Angels usually want, like a Noah Syndergaard, paying a guy past his prime. I don't know if it's Artie or the management, but they've had a track record of Anthony Rendon, one good season, paying him $250 million. That guy couldn't hit air if it was thrown at him, right now. I don't know if that's injury or if he was choosing in Washington and no one even knew about that in the Angels organization, but that's a bad deal. Same thing with Hamilton, Pujols. They need to get guys like Carlos Rodon, who's arguably the best left-handed pitcher in the National League this year. 2 ERA, 2.5 ERA, biggest strikeout guy for a left-hander in the league this year. They need to give him $30 million a year. And it might be an overpay, but they need pitching. Hitting will be fine. You just got to kind of bank on Trout and Ohtani being healthy next year, right?
What do you think Artie Moreno's approval rating is among Angel fans?
Look, I don't want to talk crap about him because I'd love to play for the Angels, but at the same time, it's like his approval rating among fans 0% close to. I mean, they don't like him. They want him to sell the team. This is just the facts. This is just, and I think he has the ability to be a good owner. He just needs to let Perry Minashian do his job that he hired him to do, and let him make the decisions, right? That's the big difference.
Well, I personally think that it always starts from the bottom and then you have to work your way up, right? So what do they do with that farm system that they have? Because
they're doing a good job. They had a great draft pick in Zach Neto. He's an elite shortstop. He's going to come up and be a 280 hitter with 15 to 20 home runs a year when he's in his prime, and he's not too far away. Ben Joyce, 105 mile per hour thrower pitcher from Tennessee, one of the best arms we've ever seen. That's part of the reason why they traded Rossell Iglesias. They want to bring him up and be the closer because he's going to be untouchable right now. He doesn't even have to play in the minor leagues, even though he will for a little bit. They're not too far away from competing. They have a good base. They have Trout, they have Ohtani, they have Rendon. Those are three really good hitters, even though Rendon is, fallen off, and Jared Walsh and Taylor Ward and Joe Adele. I know they traded Brandon Marsh, but you kind of just need to play a Joe Adele the rest of the year, and next year, 162 games, former top prospect, see if he works out. And they need to get another starter, and they need to bolster the pen. They gave too many guys, like Aaron Loop, $10 million off a career year. Ryan Tepera, $7 million, who had a 4 ERA for the Blue Jays just a couple years ago, right? So it's like you're getting the wrong guy. And in their defense, there wasn't a great market for pitching last year. There'll be a better market this summer. They need to bolster the bullpen. Don't overpay. Try and find diamonds in the rough, right? Develop guys. Focus on your player development like the Dodgers do too, more so. And then sign a Rodon for the staff because they have Shohei Ohtani, Patrick Sandoval, Reed Detmers. That's a great first three to have in your pitching staff. They're really not far away from competing. And then you have a lineup of Trout, Ohtani, Rendon, Walsh, like I mentioned. They should win. It's more of like a trust. There's a toxic positivity issue where they don't like to admit that the team is just like a mess right now. And then there's a second thing where they need to trust their player development. They're doing a better job though ever since Perry Minashian came in. They've had some really great draft picks.
You mentioned Joe Adele, and he's only 23 years old. What is the ceiling now that he's kind of struggled in the majors?
I think a lot of people are out on him, and again, I don't like to, I've heard a ton of things, don't know if they're true about him, having been refusing to listen to certain like adjustments. I don't know if that's true or not. This is just a rumor going around from some sources I have that follow the Angels pretty closely. Hopefully he listens. Again, I know he's a hard worker. I think his talent is off the roof. I think he's a Byron Buxton type at his ceiling, but he's also a bust if he doesn't put in the work and make changes to his swing, because there's an obvious hole in his swing. I know he had a home run yesterday. There's an obvious hole in his swing, but I mean, his potential's through the roof. He just needs to become more like humble, more of a veteran, but he's young. He's young. You can't. Byron Buxton never made it till he was 28, 29. He wasn't good,
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, that's crazy. Well, let's switch over to basketball really quick. LeBron James and agent Rich Paul reportedly had a productive meeting, you guys, with the Lakers regarding a contract extension as James becomes eligible yesterday for an extension. What do you think will happen here as LeBron is in no rush to sign this extension?
I don't know what's going to happen in terms of the extension. All signs point to it not being a rush to get it done, but our friend, the great Jovan Buha of The Athletic.
Oh, that's our guy, bro.
It is our guy.
He follows me on TikTok now, too.
There we go. He had an article with The Athletic that came out today about the Lakers' closing lineup. And it was LeBron, Anthony Davis, Austin Reeves, Troy Brown Jr., and Juan Toscano-Anderson. And Jihei, you're looking at me puzzled. And I agree with you completely. That sounds like garbage.
Well, if Troy Brown Jr. gets over 5 minutes a game next year, that team, you can lock him in as they're not making the playoff. That guy sucks. No offense. I mean, he's better than me. He's better than me and you. But, like, I'm just saying, like, for an NBA player, he sucks.
That lineup sounds like no.
No offense. Who's going to shoot?
That sounds garbage.
Who's going to shoot? I mean, Austin Reeves shot 30%. I know he'll be better from I'm so high on Austin Reeves. I know he's been putting in work. I think he's going to have a huge leap this season. I think he needs to play point guard, by the way. I really do. I think he can do that. And what people thought is just because he's white and 6'6", and like they thought he had a jumper, but he's actually a great scorer and a guard. He's more of a scorer and a guard than a shooter. His shooting will get better, but that's, you're right, Jihei. You're right, Armand. That lineup, come on, Juan, JTA? At least AD Thomas Bryan on there, and then put in like, who's Cole Swider at shooting guard.
But then when the reason why I brought this lineup up is because why would LeBron sign an extension with that roster?
It makes sense.
But again, you got to understand, this is, look, I love you, LeBron. This is your own fault. You wanted Westbrook.
Absolutely.
This is what happens. And I think LeBron's realizing that, you know, I know it's his reputation's on the line. If he leaves the Lakers, everyone's going to be like, well, you created that mess. Why are you leaving? So I think he has some ego thing where he want, and I respect the hell out of it. Like, I would have the same thing where he wants to fix this mess that he created. He wants to put the team on his back and win another championship. And I respect that, whether it's delusional or not. I think they have a shot. Obviously, they have a chance if Davis is healthy. Like I mentioned, the stat that's crazy is LeBron's never missed the finals with a healthy star. I don't consider Westbrook a star. So that he was the only healthy star on the roster last year. So I never count out LeBron, and Davis is the key to this team. Regardless of that lineup you just put out there, they could put out three bums that are 12 years old in Anthony Davis and LeBron James, and they'd find a way. You know, those guys just need to be healthy.
My other concern with the Lakers, and, you know, people keep saying we get 65 games out of LeBron and AD. My whole issue is if you are saying, okay, we get 65 games out of Anthony Davis, right? That means 17 games he's not there. And those 17 games, when you talk about a jam-packed Western Conference or 65 games of LeBron, those 17 games, when you have one and not the other, I think that what would their record
Austin
be?
Austin Reeves, 17? Bro. Don't count out Austin Reeves.
Well, if you still have a healthy LeBron and he's playing.
No, he's saying if LeBron and Davis don't play 17 games, right?
I know. Let's say you have like
one
half
one
of
is there.
Correct. Yeah. One's there and one's not.
Oh, so if you have LeBron, you're going to win.
But if you have AD, that's a whole other.
AD is not a good one. I hate to say it. He can't win games being the one. Like, he can be the number one option, but LeBron needs to get him open. LeBron needs to be that leader to get him there.
Well, so do you think that Austin Reeves would be that one? Would be that leader?
I think he could. I think they're undoubtedly going to be better. I know they have arguably a worse roster, but they're more athletic. They're younger, similar to their 2020 title team, which didn't have shooting as well, by the way. I'm not saying they're going to win a title.
They were relying on defense that whole entire
And they're going to be better defensively, so as a result, they're going to have a better record, right, Armand?
We heard the closing lineup. It's just...
But their defense, Darvin Ham, and their defense is going to be better. Now, look, I'm as pessimistic as a Lakers fan as anybody you'll meet, but if you're just looking at the advanced metrics, if you have a top 15, top 11 defense, which I think they will have a top 15, they were 23rd last year, that's why they lost so many games. They're going to have a better defense, and that's going to equal more wins. More wins. That's why the Charlotte Hornets will not make the play-in probably next year, because they don't play defense. The Pistons have a better shot at making the play-in because they play better defense.
I hear you. And I do agree, but I just think that the roster...
I agree. They need to make changes, bro. And why is Cole Swider not in that final? They need to give that man 5 years, $10 million already. Like, I don't care. He's already better than Duncan Robinson.
And you see that, by the way, with other teams. Like, I think it was the Pelicans, I think, locked in Jose Alvarado, for example.
Respect. Right. And they're going to do it with Herb Jones, too.
Yeah, and they do it right away. As soon as they see a glimpse of, like, oh, that guy can play, four-year deal.
Like, why is Rob Pelinka not transferring Cole Swider to the full roster? That's because they panicked inside Troy Brown Jr. You don't need Troy Brown Jr.
Well, apparently he's in the closing lineup now, so.
No, that guy is, I need you want to give me Jovan's number? I need to text him or hit him up on TikTok and like, why Troy Brown Jr.?
Yeah, that's.
I was just going to say, why don't you just talk to your boy? Because apparently.
Yeah, I'm going to send him a message on TikTok saying, okay, I don't know why you were thinking Troy Brown Jr., but please, anybody but Troy Brown Jr., Scottie Pippen Jr. even over Troy Brown Jr.
So who would you guys have in that bottom two then? Because I
told you I would have
Reeves and I
Thomas Bryant because he can stretch the floor, Anthony Davis,
are we
LeBron,
talking closing line?
Closing line. Yeah. Thomas Bryant, Anthony Davis, LeBron James, Austin Reeves, and then Cole Swider. Huge lineup. Those guys are all 6'8 and above.
What about you, Armand?
I'm going LeBron, 80 at the five. I'm going smaller, so I'm going
Swider.
Lonnie Walker.
Oh, yeah. Lonnie Walker is good, too.
Reeves. Yeah. And then...
Swider, LeBron? God,
that is a tough fifth one.
Swider can play the two at 6'9", bro. God. And he plays defense.
I like him a lot. And I just want to see it in the NBA before. I think he will be good. I just like...
He's the perfect fit alongside LeBron. People are like, oh, trade for Joe Harris. You have Joe Harris. Yeah. Like, that guy's Joe Harris. You know what I'm saying? Like,
all right, he could be the fifth.
how gracious of you. It sounds so gracious.
I also, though, Kendrick Nunn is still an option for me for the fifth spot. And it's funny that none of us brought up Westbrook.
No, but I mean, like, you got to put Reeves. Well, Westbrook in a closing lineup? You might as well shoot yourself in the head, play Russian roulette if he's closing in your lineup. I'm dead serious. That guy cannot be on the floor. He doesn't play a lick of defense.
Yeah, no. I mean, we all know. I think we all have the consensus on Westbrook and how
he's coming back too, bro.
For sure.
Let's run it back.
I guess so. Well, let's leave it there for now. We will run it back. When we come back, we're going to talk to our good friend of the show, Mr. Michael Duarte, when we come back on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Fan in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network.
We'll be right back with the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
The biggest pro football overlays in Vegas are back with $12 million in guaranteed prizes only at Circa Sports. With two ways to win and no rake. Circa Million with quarterly payouts and 100% payback. And Circa Survivor. Select one team each week with no point spread. Take in the big money with $12 million in guaranteed prizes. Enter in Vegas. Play from anywhere. Visit CircaSports.com for details.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Welcome back to the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Fan in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. Just as a reminder, if you have any questions or a comment or just want to win tickets to an upcoming game, guys, in LA, Vegas, or Hawaii, call our hotline at 310-400-0340. Again, that number is 310-400-0340. Also, don't forget to email us at arashmarkazishow@gmail.com. Okay, let's go to the Circa Sports guest hotline. Circa Millions and Circa Survivor Pro football contest with $12 million in guaranteed prizes are back. Visit circasports.com for details. Here he is, good friend of the show, Mr. Michael Duarte. Michael, how are you doing?
Hi, everybody. A very pleasant good morning to you all, wherever you may be.
Yeah, no, definitely, Michael. It is beautiful. I'm sure it's beautiful where you are. It's beautiful where we are as well. We wanted to, all week long, we've basically been discussing the passing of a legend in the voice of baseball in Vin Scully. I just wanted to get your thoughts on how are you taking it? What are your thoughts on Vin Scully, and what are your greatest memories?
Yeah, excellent. Thank you for asking. It was a very difficult day. It's been a very difficult last couple of days since hearing of the passing of Vin Scully. This is a person who has had a tremendous impact on my life, as Arash probably could attest to you as well. Growing up in Southern California, growing up in Los Angeles, and growing up a Dodgers fan, Vin Scully was like the friend we never had or never had met, but yet he was always there for you. He was the voice of our summer. He was the soundtrack of our summer. And, you know, we throw the word GOAT around a lot in today's day and age. We try to tag everybody that we think is really, really good or that we love or idolize as an athlete or in their respective profession as the GOAT. But Vin Scully was the true GOAT. He was the true greatest of all time at what he did as a broadcaster. Each and every night, he gave a masterclass on storytelling. And he was the Picasso of play-by-play. He would simply take a blank canvas of a baseball game that would start off on the first pitch, and he would paint us a picture like nobody else could. And so that's something that even though he's been retired for 6 years and he's been out of the spotlight, and he's remained a very private person. He lives very close to me here. I've seen him a handful of times over the years. I just spoke to him recently. So it had helped. And even as we speak now, there is this giant 4x4 painting of him in the Dodgers broadcast booth overlooking the field at Chavez Ravine at Dodger Stadium with all the lights on calling a game that has sit above my desk probably for the last 10 years or so. And I look at it every day, and it's been my backdrop during the pandemic for Zoom. And so he's here. He's always a little part of it. But it was a pretty difficult day, pretty difficult last few days. And this is Friday, so the Dodgers are planning on doing a very big pregame ceremony for him before Friday night's game against the Padres. And I imagine that's going to be a very emotional time and difficult time for more people, but also a celebration of a great, great man who led a great, great life.
Yeah, Michael, and you just mentioned it. You were able to speak to Vin, you told me, nine or so days before his passing. What was that conversation like, if you can disclose some of it, and what were your lasting memories of that final conversation that you guys had?
Yeah, Armand, I am just going to say I am so, so blessed and fortunate to be, you know, maybe one of the last people to speak to him or have a phone conversation with him, especially in the world of sports journalism and sports media. And it's funny because I think the whole origin, the genesis of me speaking to Vin Scully, now probably 2 weeks ago from today, was the fact that Arash kind of sparked it and put me in a situation where I kind of had to do it. And so what happened was, and of course, Arash and I spoke about this during the All-Star game. There was a little 10-year-old boy named Blake Rice who went viral for walking up to Clayton Kershaw. We probably discussed it on this show. Arash took video of it. So did I. Both of those videos, I think, went viral and did very well for us. And, he told Clayton Kershaw that his grandfather's bucket list, and his grandfather had died of brain cancer. The grandfather's two bucket list items, among other things, were to meet his favorite player, Clayton Kershaw, and was to meet Vin Scully, who he loved and idolized like most people in Southern California and baseball fans across the globe. And so we obviously witnessed him meeting Clayton Kershaw in the moment, which was one bucket list item, but Vin Scully was a little bit more difficult. But because I had a personal relationship with Vin Scully, I had his phone number in my phone, and I thought about, in that moment there at the press conference, you know, waiting and then talking to the father and the son and telling them that, you know, I would reach out for them to try to get that last bucket item crossed off the list. But the ironic thing was, there in the moment, I didn't. Everybody started crowding around the kid. I had to rush back up to the press box. And so I didn't do it in that first moment, the moment that went viral that he speaks to Clayton in the press conference room. So I run back up into the press box, and then I was maybe up there less than 5 minutes, and we get a message in the press box that, you know, Mookie Betts and some of the other players, the Dodgers who had started in the All-Star game, or Sandy Alcantara was another guy who came in behind Kershaw, they were all ready to be interviewed. They had come out of the game. They had changed. They were dressed and ready to be interviewed down in this separate little room. So I went back down to that room, and I saw Arash, and we were waiting for Mookie Betts, and we were talking about Blake Rice, this kid, and Arash said, and I told Arash that you know, I had Vin Scully's phone number, and I could reach out to him, and Arash said, "You have to do that. You have to do that." And so then Arash and I go out, and we find the 10-year-old kid and his father just kind of sitting there outside that little room where the scrum was, and so Arash starts interviewing the kid with his phone. And when he's done with the interview, he says, "Now here's Michael, and he has a surprise for you guys to maybe cross off that extra bucket list item." So right there, I was pot committed, as they say in the poker game. And so I took out my phone, and I called him right then and there, and I spoke to his daughter, and his daughter said, "Oh, he's resting right now." And just so you guys know, and it's something that wasn't public information at the time, but we had kind of known in the Dodgers community, it was a known secret that, Vin was no longer moving. He was no longer ambulatory. He was confined to a bed. He was bedridden. He had a full-time nurse. He was okay, but you know, he, anybody who's 94 years old and lived the life that he has, he had good days and bad. And so, you know, this was not necessarily a shock to everybody, but I think we were hoping it would be longer, that he'd be around to still be there for us, to be that light, to be that smile that brightened our day. Anyway, long story short, he called me the next day, Wednesday. I was at the ESPYs, and this is a fun part of the story that a lot of people have shared over the years, because Vin Scully calls you from a private number when he calls. And so I'm on the ESPYs red carpet, and I'm actually interviewing Mookie Betts, or talking to Mookie Betts, who had just arrived with his wife at the time. And this private number keeps popping up on my phone. And I don't answer private numbers, just like you guys probably don't either. And so I keep just sending this call to voicemail, because I'm in the middle of this interview with Mookie Betts, or talking to Mookie Betts. And it just keeps calling 2 times, 3 times, 4 times. And finally I'm like, "Okay, Mookie, I'll see you inside the theater. Like, I'm going to get this call, because if someone's calling me 4 times now, like, it's probably got to be important, or they really want to talk to me." So finally, the 5th time they call, I answer, and this woman's voice says, "Hi, is this Michael?" And I said, "Yeah." And they said, "Can you hold for Vin Scully?" And I was like, "Oh my gosh." And so I jumped this red velvet rope that was keeping the media away from the red carpet of the ESPYs, and right on the other side of the red carpet, Gatorade and the ESPN had set up this like gifting suite, this like lounge for athletes to kind of duck into and hang out and get away from all the craziness of the red carpet. So like I sprint in there, and by the time I get to the back of that room, I hear that famous baritone voice where the words are kind of drawn out. And "Is this Michael? This is Vin Scully." And I said, "Vin, I know who you are. You don't have to say that." And he's like, "Okay." And then I sat there, and we had a good 15 to 20 minute conversation. And I'll tell you guys, even at 94 years old, even less than 2 weeks before he ends up ultimately passing, his mind was sharp. He was genuine. He was generous. He was kind. He still had wit and humor about him. And he was the same old Vin Scully. The only thing I could tell you I noticed was he spoke a little slower than normally, but he kind of spoke very slowly to begin with. But he's there, and he wanted to know about this 10-year-old kid. He wanted to know about the grandfather. He asked me the names of everybody. He asked me to spell it so he could write it down. He wanted to know where this grandfather was, where he grew up, what he died of, what the other bucket list items were. He really wanted to complete this story and complete this bucket list item to him. And so towards the end of the call, from giving him all this information, I said, "You know, Vin, Vin lives in Hidden Hills. I live in Calabasas. We're right next to each other." And I said to him, "You know, I live right down the street from you, less than a mile. So if you'd like to go get lunch when, you know, Blake and his family come back to Los Angeles, I can arrange that and take care of that for you." And he goes, "Well, you might not believe this, Michael, but I don't move around as much as I used to. So that probably won't happen, but I'm going to give him a phone call." So he, you know, ultimately tried to call them, and that's how that story ended. But the last words that I said to Vin Scully were, Vin, we love you. We miss you. We're praying for you. And I'll talk to you soon. And those were the last things I said to him. And so that gives me some comfort and solace and warms my heart that I was able to echo those words and sentiments to him. I don't know why I pluralized it and used the word we. Maybe I felt like in that moment I was speaking for all of us. But that's what I said to him. And that was the last phone call. I then also called him last Friday, so a week ago, and just a few days before he ultimately ends up passing, just to check in. And his daughter answered and said that he was having lunch and asked me if she wanted to, I wanted him to call me back. And I said, no, he doesn't have to call me back. I was just checking in. And, you know, he said, oh, he's out having lunch right now. So it seemed like lunch there at his house. So it seemed like he was doing well up until, you know, the very end. So maybe this, you know, kind of came up and snuck up on people and happened pretty suddenly here in the last few days.
Yeah, Michael, it's tough to follow that amazing story, but I was going to ask you, speaking of the Dodgers, they had a quiet deadline. We haven't talked since the deadline. What did you think they, I mean, I know there's a lot of trust in Andrew Friedman over the past couple of years, not a big splash at the deadline. They did trade Mitch White for a nice prospect and Nick Frasso. They did get, you know, Martin, the arm and the pen. But a lot of this Dodgers scheme, they're relying on guys coming back, right, Michael? Is this the right move? What did you make of the deadline moves by the Dodgers?
Yeah, so I wouldn't say they were quiet. Externally, from what we saw as fans, they were quiet. But internally, my sources were telling me they were in on everybody. They had phone calls on everybody. They were a very, very close second to getting Juan Soto. In fact, I was told from a source, and unfortunately, Andrew Friedman, when I spoke to him about this, would not give me any details of the talks out of respect to the Nationals and the Padres. But I was told the Nationals gave the Dodgers, and the fans might not like to hear this, but they gave them a final chance to beat the Padres' offer. So if they wanted to go, you know, six prospects, if they wanted to go top prospects, and from what I was told, the Nationals wanted Tony Gonsolin in these talks. They wanted Gavin Lux in these talks. They wanted major league ready talent in addition to guys like Bobby Miller, Diego Cartaya, which I don't even think the Nationals maybe would have been interested in, even though players are, but they just got Keibert Ruiz, so they're pretty good at catcher for the foreseeable future. But they wanted all of the top, they wanted four, five top prospects from the Dodgers, and they wanted guys like Tony Gonsolin and Gavin Lux, major league ready guys for Juan Soto. And it's arguable to say, where's Juan Soto even play? Obviously, he's probably going to left field and be your everyday left fielder. But then where are you going to play Chris Taylor? We're going to play Trace Thompson. We're going to play these other guys that you have on your roster. So ultimately, the Dodgers they thought the price was too high. They obviously drove the price up for the Padres, which isn't good for the next 2.5 seasons. But maybe it hurts the Padres down the road. But that's what they were there. They were also in on Shohei Ohtani, and they really liked Shohei Ohtani and wanted to do that. They were in on Lopez and Garrett Cooper in Miami. They were looking to pull the trigger there. There was a lot of talks with a lot of teams, but ultimately, as Andrew Friedman told me, and it's very logical here, is he tries to make the moves to improve the ball club in the winter, in the off season. Whether that's via trade, acquiring a guy like Mookie Betts, for example, 2 years ago, or via free agency, acquiring an all-star and an MVP and Freddie Freeman at first base, and getting guys like Tyler Anderson and Andrew Heaney. He tries to make those moves in the winter where he says the price is not as expensive as it is at the trade deadline, where teams that are selling or maybe are still in the wild card chase know that these other teams like the Dodgers, who are going to be in the playoffs, will pay more in prospects than they will in the offseason. So he just kind of said everything was more expensive and the price tag was too high. And what I can tell you about Andrew Friedman, Brandon, is that in past years when he has made a splash, when he has made a blockbuster deal, so to speak, and gotten a star out of it, it is usually to fill a void that has been created by an injury. And when you believe you have a chance to win the World Series, then Andrew Friedman is willing to pay that extra price, the more expensive price, to fill that void that hole. He calls it, you know, acute needs. We can go back to 2018 when Corey Seager was out for the season with Tommy John surgery. He goes out and he gets Manny Machado. In 2019, they didn't need really anything, so they were more fringe moves. A reliever like Adam Kolarik and smaller pieces to help that team. In 2021, of course, Trevor Bauer's situation comes to play, and now you have this huge void in the front line of your starting rotation. So he goes out and he gets a Max Scherzer. So in the past, he's made these big blockbuster moves when he knows he needs to fill a hole, when there's an acute need on the team. The luxury of this team with the best record in baseball, best ERA in baseball, and arguably the best three in baseball in Mookie Betts, Trey Turner, and Freddie Freeman, is that there wasn't really any acute needs. And so what you can do in a situation like this, if you're not willing to pay the expensive price, is you can improve on the margin, similar to what the Atlanta Braves did last year, even though they had a big void to fill in Ronald Acuna. They go out and got, you know, a few outfielders instead of one big name. They go out and get some relief pitching and starting pitching. Very fringe on the margin move, but ultimately helped them win the World Series. And that's essentially what Andrew Friedman did here by acquiring Joey Gallo to platoon him with Trace Thompson and Chris Taylor in left field when Chris Taylor is healthy. What he did by adding Chris Martin, adding another reliever that can help us get through this stretch. Because as you mentioned, the biggest concern coming up is that you have all these guys coming off of the injured list, getting healthy, hopefully right at the right time, and some acute needs you may have can be filled internally by getting Walker Buehler, arguably the best big game pitcher in baseball, coming back, by getting Dustin Mays, a guy who's got filthy stuff, who can pitch out of the bullpen in the playoffs if you need him, coming back. Bruce Gratterall coming back, Blake Treinen coming back, Chris Taylor coming back, Edwin Rios coming back. I can go on and on and on. So maybe mortgaging the farm and selling the farm was just not worth it when you have all this talent coming off the IL soon.
I agree with what Friedman said. Final 45 seconds here, Michael. I wanted to ask you quick. A new report came out that the Angels were scared to deal Ohtani. I don't know if that report has much validity, but it's from Bleacher Report, so I'm sure it does. Would the Dodgers have made that offer that you said they were reluctant to do with Soto for a two-way talent like Shohei Ohtani?
Yeah, I think that would have been more of a trade they would have made over Juan Soto, to be honest with you. You know, they see Juan Soto as like Ted Williams reborn, and you have a guy like that in Freddie Freeman on the team. You have a lot of guys, young talent like that, who can do those things. But, you know, they will definitely be in on Shohei Ohtani if he's available this offseason. The scared fear factor you talk about, and I saw Artie Moreno trending during the trade deadline, which is never a good sign, is trading away a guy, not just a generational talent, not just the new Babe Ruth of our era, but also a guy who, in Anaheim at least, puts butts in seats, sells the most tickets, sells jerseys, the most merchandise. That is a cash cow for Artie Moreno that I'm just so surprised to see that they would take calls on him. But of course, if it can improve your team, you as a GM have to listen to those calls, as Perry Manias did. But as we had talked about, I didn't think Shohei Ohtani would move at the deadline. He obviously didn't. And it was pretty early in the deadline when he was told he was going to be not available. And then we got guys like Syndergaard, who we knew was on an expiring contract, who went. The Raisel Iglesias move, especially after they offered him a four-year extension, was surprising to me that he was the one that they traded away. But I honestly, in my gut, just don't think the Angels have the I don't want to say courage, but I don't think they're going to trade Shohei Ohtani. I think they're going to try to do everything they can to keep him.
For sure.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I think that would be, right? Why would you trade away such a generational talent? So just somebody that's, like you said, is going to put butts in seats and is going to, if you just kind of put your whole entire faith in him, I think that there's nowhere but up to go with him. Well, guys, that's all the time we have for today. Let's do it again tomorrow. Until then, this is the Arash Markazi Show saying stay safe and stay healthy.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at Ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.